We've got about 25 minutes with you here before you have to run and do your World Cafe session. And we've got some questions from listeners I want to get to. One of your fans wrote that he remembers during the process that you were working on this, the time you were working on this record, that you tweeted about it being like birthing an albatross. And he asks, what made cutting this album particularly difficult?
My indecision and option anxiety, I think, mostly.
Do you find that's worse with all the digital tweaking that you can do now?
No, I don't really tweak anything digitally. It's more like, should we also do piano on this? Well, so and so's here. Let's also, just more options. And should we do a second chorus on it, or should we? There's a lot of editing that happens, and it takes a while sometimes.
So you're not stepping into the studio with a completely predetermined notion of what a song's going to sound like.
Oh God, no, not even close. I couldn't tell you what anything's going to sound like ahead of time. I could say, oh my God, I want it to sound just like Sparks and Morrissey at the same time. Oh, it's going to be great, and then it won't sound like that, but.
Well,
You know.
a number of people did ask in the chat room and on Twitter. Just curious about your creative process. You say that you didn't go in with any particular agenda with this record. So maybe just talk about how you came at these songs.
Well, I spent a lot of time writing them, and then when it was time to go into the rehearsal space and work with the band to make them, go from demo to actual song with parts. I didn't really recognize a lot of them. And they were all really personal, which they're usually not. And so I had to kind of tweak them to make them more fun for me personally, anyway, just because I've never been interested in making confessional songs, I guess you could say. Like, I'm not that interesting. I like to make up stories about things. Like, that's what imagination is for. So, and I don't think I've had any sort of struggle that's any better or more poignant than anyone else. So, it's not, that wasn't the aim. It was just, I want to make them more interesting than just me.
So what drove you to make a more personal record then? If your life isn't more interesting than other people's, why make that shift toward more personal and, if you want to say confessional?
Well, it's just kind of what I had at the time. I was pretty depressed for a couple of years. I lost a lot of family members in, a 5-year period or so, and I never stopped working or working really hard or traveling or playing or whatever to just kind of mourn the dead. And so it caught up with me and punched me in the face. You will be sad now and you will enjoy it.
This is a really upbeat conversation we're having.
Well,
Well, that's why I never want to talk about it, because it's just not that. I mean, everybody goes through it. Every single person goes through it. And there is a lot of really hilarious things about being that depressed, but it's also really scary too. So hopefully, maybe it'll just comfort people a little if they felt that way. But I mean, there's a lot of pretty hilarious moments.
Well,
I'm hoping.
where do those personal experiences most come through in this record? Like, what to you are the most personal and maybe even hard to listen to, hard to re-experience songs on this record?
Well, they're not hard to re-experience now because I feel like myself. But there was a point, and I did a lot of research about this, and I talked to a lot of people. I became really interested in how come, as a woman who grew up in the United States of America and partially in Canada, why am I so quick to ask if I'm crazy, if I'm feeling really terrible? And I talked to women and men about it, and a lot of the men I talked to were in places that were way worse than I was. They said that they were considering suicide and things like that, and I said, well, at what point did you feel crazy? And all of them said, oh, I never actually felt crazy, but I could see it from there. And all the women I talked to were like, I was really concerned. And I think we really tell women that we're crazy way too much and is a joke or whatever, but I really was concerned. It wasn't crazy. It was feelings and depression and grief. And, you know, it'll overload you. You got to look it in the face and you got to deal with it. But I was really shocked at the amount of people I talked to who were women and said, yeah, pretty much off the bat, I was wondering if I was crazy. And all the men were like, no, I covered myself in feces and ran down the street, but I knew it was temporary.
But I'm fine.
I knew I was going to be okay, like, once I acted out. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So it's...
You know, you've clearly got such a fantastic sense of humor in it, and that's got to carry you through a lot of this.
Well, that was actually the thing I missed most, and that's how I knew I was really not doing well, is I wasn't finding anything funny anymore, and I wasn't being funny. And my best friend, Nate, he goes, you used to be fun. You used to be hilarious. What happened? And he said that in the best way. That sounds terrible, but he was like, had me by the shoulders and was like, you need help because you aren't you.
Yeah, I mean,
and
that
I was
that
like, you are absolutely right.
Yeah,
and you need
truth.
Someone to do that. Like, that was the greatest thing that could ever happen to me.
Well, you were talking about the difference between the way that women and men are perceived and the way they harness their emotions. We actually have a question here in the chat on the page. What kind of advice would you offer young women who want to pursue songwriting?
Well, just start now. Just make it up in your house. Don't look for, I mean, you can look for advice places, but, you know, just pretend you're building songwriting out of Lincoln Logs, and like, how would you do it in your house if you had to do it from the ground up? And that's generally how you find you the way you want to do it, because there's no wrong way to do it. And plus digital technology, and you can sing songs right into your phone. You know, you don't even have to be able to play an instrument. You can just sing a melody, and you know, you can do whatever you want.
You're living on
practicing. Lots of practicing.
It is.
That's
it's a
my
lot
only
of
real
work.
Advice. It is. It's a ton of work, but it's rewarding and awesome.
Do you consider yourself a sort of a crass person? Crass.
I thought you said crass person.
I am kind of a crass person. Yes, sometimes.
No, do you a technician or whatever? Or do you consider yourself some? Do you feel like you really put in the hours and this is a lot of work, and or does it sort of come naturally?
I put in an unhealthy amount of hours at times.
Yeah.
There are times when I way overthink it, and I'm sure that's part of the reason that when I hear the record now, I know logically that I like it, but I'm like, I can't really hear it, but I know what you mean. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's singing there. I don't really hear it, but it's just because I really was there for every second of everything on the record for 2 years. So,
do you keep editing it in your head? Like, once it's finished, are you able to stop and separate out the, man, I shouldn't have put horns there, or I should have put more horns there, or I should, you know, or whatever.
Well, that's probably what the blacking out means, is it's probably like a self-preservation instinct, you know, that comes from somewhere right at the front of your fight or flight. It's like, I won't let you hear this anymore, because if you hear a mistake and you want to redo the whole thing, you're all in trouble. Optioning, like the gateway to option anxiety, is a really tempting portal, but you got to really, at a certain point, go, nope, it's done. Leave it alone.
We've got a listener named Inman. You live out in the country now. You live on a farm, and Inman writes that your surrounding environment has always been apparent in your songwriting and sound. And how has that evolved through the years, especially now that you're based on your farm in Vermont? So maybe first tell us a little bit about the land and how it's become a part of you.
Well, I think up until this record, I'd always been really just longing for it and looking for it extra hard in urban settings or on the road or wherever. And now I'm there. So I get a lot of comfort from that, and a lot of, what would I call it? I just, you know, self-confidence. Mm-hmm. It's like a really nice water filter where, you know, you can have a really crappy week or day, and then you can go walk through the forest for a while and walk the dogs and really kind of get rid of that bad stuff and come in the house again with a whole new attitude and just feeling really good about yourself as a critter.
What kind of critters do you have on the farm? Is it a working farm?
It's working if you're a vegetable, but the animals don't actually do any work. They do a lot of sleeping on the ground, upside down, and eating things and getting petted. But there's 4 dogs and 2 cats and 4 chickens and a horse.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have no desire to raise livestock. It's just too much work. But my neighbor's cows also graze on my farm, and I love those girls so much. They're the snuggliest critters ever.
We've got another question from a listener named Alina, and she points out a line that I found very curious and really intrigued me as well. She says she seriously loves the new record, and there's one lyric, "You never held it at the right angle," has me intrigued. Any meaning or thoughts to it that you could share?
It was just meant to intrigue, but if I say what it was, it won't intrigue anyone, so it means what you want it to mean. And yeah, I can't be too specific because I don't always know either.
Yeah.
But it repeats in your mind and you go, well, I guess that's what I'm going to say because I can't stop thinking about it. But I don't really think about it too hard sometimes.
Do you sort of write lyrics almost stream of consciousness and you realize you don't know where you're going when you start, but then you come to realize, oh, I guess I'm writing about this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I collage a lot of things too. Like I write all the time, and you know, some days I'll write an entire song and it'll happen really fast. And then some days it's just little snippets, and then I'll look at them all together and try to kind of collage them a bit. And then that sometimes yields nice end results. And sometimes I just sound like a boob, but it works out in the end.
You know, one thing that's been interesting to me about this particular record, I got, you know, advance word, like, oh, this record is coming, and there are all these amazing collaborators on it. It's got, you know, M. Ward and Tucker Martine and Kelly Hogan, of course, and, you know, Rachel Flotard, and a lot of people you've worked with before. But the collaborators, there's this big, long list. And then, to me, I listen to this record, and it just all sounds entirely like you. Like, what...
I'm a powerful demon. I'm just a demon. I just subjugate them to my will.
I mean,
thank you.
I'm kidding. That's a terrible thing to say.
I mean, I don't mean to suggest that they don't have a presence, but like what is it, I guess, that you look to get out of those collaborations?
Well, I always ask people that I feel really comfortable with, and I already really, really, really like their work. So I generally, somebody asked me the other day, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much direction would you say you give your collaborators? And I said, probably about a 2, because they're already doing things I really genuinely like. And, you know, now and again, I'll say things like, no, 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 do more of that. Do that again. That was awesome. Or could you also do that on the piano as well as the keyboard or something? But I'm not usually, you know, standing over them with the baton. 1 and 2 and 3, get it right.
That's probably how you get to work with them again and again.
John Confortino, I will show you how to play those drums. You know, he's already the man. And, you know, Kurt Dahl from the New Pornographers have been playing with forever. So I don't have to worry that they're just going to be amazing, because they are.
Yeah, you have to be firm sometimes. Yeah,
yeah, you got to be. Being really mean,
yeah,
is what really gets results.
It's what keeps them coming back.
Shot me to the middle. Yeah. So we've got a listener.
I'll make you eat that holy Claire. You get this trick right. I never open my teeth when talking to them either. Just constantly like this.
So M. Cronhart writes, you mentioned Kelly Hogan, and we love her too. Kelly Hogan, he says, or she says, not sure who wrote this, is awesome. I'm happy to see her on the album and love the album. Is there a rhyme or reason to who makes it in your business? And is it frustrating to see folks like Kelly not getting more widespread attention?
Well, I mean, I think that we exist in a different realm. That's one thing about the music industry people don't really know, is that there's the big money business, and then there's our business, which is the blue collar side. We work really hard, and we work constantly. And, you know, I'm in 2 full-time bands, so there's not like a lot of time off. But the good thing about it is it means you rehearse so much that, and you play so much that you hopefully get better. As far as Kelly goes, she could be making all the records that she wants, but she wants to do it at her pace. So I don't think Kelly is unhappy with that, but I don't doubt that Kelly will be remembered for being the great, great vocalist that she is. And frankly, no one I know wants to be famous on a Britney Spears level. None of us want that. We've all known really famous people, and that kind of fame makes people genuinely unhappy, for the most part, has been my experience. So, you know, we like where we are. We like working hard, and we like collaboration and slow growth. It's like they used to call it artist development in the music business back in the day, and, you know, there aren't that many people who allow for that anymore. Did I answer your question, or was that just really weird? Basically, I don't want to speak for Kelly Hogan because, you know, she has her own schedule that she's keeping. Do I badger her to make records constantly? Yes,
More than once every 11 years.
Yeah, I do. But, you know, also I know Kelly has a method, and she will do it, and it will be awesome.
Yeah.
There's a question here in the chat from a Lynn Olson. It says, "You are my favorite Twitter user." I was like, all questions that start with "you are great." Can you tell us more about how Twitter has changed how you communicate and share with your fans?
Well, I'm gonna have to basically steal what Katie Lang said about Twitter. We were talking about it, and she said, "You know, I knew I was crazy about my audience, but I didn't know how much I could love them until I started talking to them kind of one-on-one via Twitter." She's like, "I love them, and now I love them." Like, you can, it's really nice to just interact with people as you choose, and, you know, not always have to talk about yourself. Like, you can choose to talk to people in a more friendly way, like, let's talk about broccoli recipes, or I don't know, just stuff like that is so much fun. Or talking about movies that we like, or, you know, just getting to know people on kind of a friend level, not a, you know, I'm the musician and you're my fan, yes, I will take your praise. Do you know what I mean? Because that's a strange place to be in. But you can talk about things like, where's a really good vegan restaurant, or where is the best steakhouse in this, and, you know, you get to know people in a very sweet way.
It's not a very guarded medium. Like, it allows for a lot more candor, I guess. For some people, probably that's not a good thing. But
I just never realized how empty my life was until I got on Twitter and I had nothing to say to that I thought anybody would find remotely interesting. But that's just me. That's just where I'm coming from.
The story of poor Robin.
Oh, Robin.
So I don't know.
I'm rocking him back and forth right now. It's okay, Robin.
It's gonna be okay.
It's gonna be okay.
I love questions like this one that comes from Andrew. And Andrew writes, "What question do you ask yourself the most and wish you had an answer to?"
Oh wow.
What is wrong with me? That's what I ask most of the time.
I thought we determined early on that
you... And sometimes I laugh and sometimes I cry, but I ask myself that a lot. What is wrong with you? What are you doing?
And
you just spent an hour popping seed pods standing in a field. What are you doing right now? You know, just where did that hour go? What is wrong with you? You are weird.
I thought we determined at the beginning that you'd already figured out that you're not really crazy. And
oh no, I'm not crazy. I'm odd, but I'm okay.
Okay,
with that.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
That's fine.
That's
odd,
fair enough.
But I'm not mentally ill. I'm just odd. I'm an odd bird, I guess.
I don't know how much you want to talk about some of the specific stories behind these songs, since you'd like to leave them open to some interpretation, but I'll try a few here.
I'll take a crack at it.
Let's see. Someone who goes by the handle Middle Feast. That's great. Middle Feast writes, "What's the story behind Nearly Midnight Honolulu?"
That's a verbatim conversation that I witnessed literally exactly the way it happens in the song. I was in Honolulu, it was nearly midnight, and some creepy mom was yelling at her cute little kid who was just singing a little song. And it was horrible.
Wow.
That's about it.
Yeah, I think that one's that song has stuck with a lot of people.
Yeah, that jumps out. It's interesting in that song. You are then you're not only sort of transcribing that conversation, but you are then imparting a message to the little girl.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking, you know, because there's the point where you see the person yelling at their kid and being really mean for no good reason. And then, you know, part of me wanted to just tackle that woman and punch the crap out of her, which is a not popular stance. But given how much America loves violence, I'm always always like, what are you talking about? You know, but that was my impulse that I did not act on, hence not crazy. But
see?
I watched the little girl handle it, and she just went, whatever, and turned around and went the other way and kept singing her little song. But the thing that really hurts about it is I know how hard that little girl's going to pay for that later. She's going to pay double for that later.
You
and
hope
it
not.
Sucks. I've been that kid. She's going to pay for it. No question.
Well, I think some people who heard that song hoped it wasn't somehow autobiographical. And you play around a lot with point of view and even gender. And one listener writes in, let's see, this comes from Andrea. I've always loved the way you play with gender in your songs. What's the story behind the song Man?
I don't really think of myself specifically as a woman, you know? I'm kind of a critter, like I'm an animal, you know, everybody's an animal. And I find I'm much happier and more well-balanced if I think of myself that way. Because, you know, I'm a straight white female or whatever, sure, at the gynecologist, but the rest of the time, you know, I feel pretty all over the place. And that's what I was guaranteed as an American citizen. And I really took it to heart. So I'll be whatever I want, whenever I want, all the time. And I like to watch nature shows a lot. And I know that, you know, I'm specifically talking about America here. I'm not necessarily, I mean, I lived in Canada for a long time too. So I think they're very similar in this way. But, you know, we really enjoy nature shows. We really enjoy science and programs like that. And, you know, you would watch a show about lions, say, and if you call the lioness a lion, nobody would correct you. But even the most, you know, free-thinking liberal people, if you call yourself a guy, like, well, I'm a guy who likes that, people would go, you're a girl. And I would say, why are you even bothering to correct me? And they would say, I have no idea why I'm doing that. It's just a reflex that comes out. And this is kind of interesting. And, you know, I think it would just be a lot easier if we just, you know, I'm a man, sure. Like, if there was a nature show about me, I would be called a man. And then maybe they'd get to lioness later. I don't know. But that, like, as a creature, that's what we are. So we get to own it.
But you also pick out a lot of characteristics that are often attributed specifically to men. I mean, that whole line, you know, you'll deal with me directly. You know, this very, like, you know, I'm a man's man that you know, seems, you know, specifically addressing gender roles.
Right. Well, me personally, I'm probably a little imbalanced in that if you were to look at a human creature as kind of you know, like a vase or something, my glass is a little bit more full of the man stuff than the woman stuff. So I'm probably a little bit macho. And so, you know, I was just talking about myself, but then I'm also talking about everyone too.
You recently,
I could use a little more balance. I could be a little more feminine and I'd probably be a little bit happier, but I don't know. The word feminine doesn't really resonate with me in any way that I would want anything to do with it, because not because it's not cool to be feminine. It is, but you know, just based on my initial responses as a kid to media and advertising based on, you know, gender, which when I was a kid, I didn't really have parents, but I was raised kind of by TV. So if you were going to pick the frilly pink thing with nobody in it, and, you know, like the commercials were really segregated, like girls' toys only had girls in the commercial. boys' toys only had boys in the commercial. Like the muddy G.I. Joe just seemed way more fun to me than sitting inside. And I don't know, they just, it really was unappealing to me. It just seemed sinister somehow. And that's just my personal take on it. But as a youngin', as a young critter, as a feral critter, my immediate choice was not the dolls, but stuffed animals, sure, but not. And you know, the G.I. Joe was a little pretty, there was a pretty narrow path on both sides, but the feminine choice was never the one that was cool. Do you know what I mean? It was never the one that I would choose. Like, if you get to be like the, you know, if they did it in sort of a prince and princess way, like, do you want to grow up to be the king, or would you rather be the dress wearing courtier? You know, I would rather be the king. Thank you. I can do more than wear dresses. There's a little more choice there. And you know, this is my personal take on it, but, and I'm sure I'll get in a lot of trouble for it.
With whom?
Oh, you know, people.
No good deed goes unpunished. The beatings will continue until morale improves.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of beatings, but I can take them because I'm very macho, and that's fine with me.
So you dish out the beatings.
Sometimes.
We've only got a couple of minutes. There have been some questions about the tour. Any cities that you're going to be getting to that you haven't been to before on this tour, or any places that you're...
No, I've been around. I got to say, I've been around. So probably nothing new until next year, when we'll do things like hopefully go to places like Alaska and Iceland that we've never been. But in North America, I don't know that there's anywhere I haven't been, except for St. John's, Newfoundland, which I would really like to go to, but that's probably later too.
We got a reader here. It says, I actually have a Maybe Sparrow tattoo, so I'm happy you've joined the Inked Club. Any more tats coming your way? Because you just recently got tattoos on your arms.
Well, it's actually been a few years, but there was no reason for me to do it when I did, except that I'm not going to get a bank job now, so it's okay. It's been I've wanted them for 20 years, and I thought, well, you have a job. You can do that. Sure.
In your line of work, you can have tattoos.
Yeah. Or maybe I'll get another one. I don't really have anything planned.
Get that dagger with a rose wrapped around it that you've had your eye on for...
Probably more of a jester springing out of a bong, I'm thinking.
Like a wizard holding a glowing
right
orb.
Up my chest. Right up the front of my chest.
You've got my gears turning now.
Yeah. Jack in the bong. I'm going to get a Jack in the bong tattoo.
I would love to keep...
You'll be able to smell it just by looking at it, like, oh,
I can
wow.
smell it from here.
That's bold. That is a bold move.
Nico, I'd love to keep you on here, but I promised I'd let you go so you can go do your World Cafe session there in Philly at WXPN. Our thanks to them for helping out... getting us connected here today, and thank you so much for this music, and thank you for joining us and taking questions from your fans.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me, and thanks to the folks who asked the questions. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
You too.